like 25 minutes, and we'll see how far we can cover here in 2 Samuel chapter 17. As I was looking over this last week, it dawned on me, this section of David's life would make a great suspense movie. Any of you like suspense movies where, you're just kind of sitting on your edge of the seat wondering what's going to happen the whole time? They're a lot of fun. This one would make a great one, because you can just imagine, you fade into the beginning, and David's running out of Jerusalem. That'd be a great way to start this movie, I think. David's fleeing Jerusalem, and you have to put together the pieces of the story, so maybe there's some flashbacks to explain why Absalom is rebelling against him. But he has run away from the city with a few of his supporters. He has gone down to the Jordan River, which is about 20 miles east of Jerusalem, descending into the very deep Jordan Valley. And he is waiting there at what's called the Fords of the Wilderness, or the Doors of the Wilderness, which if you cross over the Jordan River, you get into the Moab wilderness on the eastern side. And he's waiting there for news, because he left a friend in Jerusalem, and that friend's name was Hushai the Archite. Hushai was a very wise man, and David asked him to stay in Jerusalem and pretend to be loyal to Absalom so that Hushai could give counsel that would favor David. Well, that happened. If we remember a couple of weeks ago that Absalom was seeking advice on what to do next, and his main counselor, Ahithophel, told him, "Let me gather an army really quick, and I'll go attack David tonight, and we'll destroy him. I'll kill just the king, and I'll bring everybody back, and they'll all welcome you as the king, and it'll be great." And then Absalom asked David's friend Hushai what we should do, and Hushai said, "No. Gather the whole army. You ride at the head of them, white charger, full armor, all the glory there that goes on." With that battle, and we'll go catch David. And if he runs and hides, we'll seek him out and find him. He uses that great imagery of if David hides in a city, then we'll throw ropes about it, and all Israel will drag it into the valley. So there'll be nothing to stop you, Absalom, if you listen to my advice. Well, that's where we have left things off. So that's right in the middle of the movie, and the scene pans out, it blacks out, and you're not quite sure which way Absalom is going to go, except that it seems like all of Absalom's counselors like Hushai's advice better than Ahithophel's advice. Maybe we'd have to change some of the names to like Rick and Steve. It'd be easier to remember than Hushai and Ahithophel, right? Real quick quiz, who's Ahithophel? Bathsheba's granddad. So the intrigue there that Bathsheba's grandfather is now trying to kill Bathsheba's husband David is an interesting little twist, okay? Of course, there's an interesting twist in just that David's son is trying to kill him too. This is incidentally the period of time when David writes Psalm chapter 3, and I'm going to just read a couple of verses for you from Psalm chapter 3. We went over these on Wednesday nights, but it says, "O Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God." Sounds like a pretty distressing situation, doesn't it? And that's what we've seen out of David. Everywhere he turns, somebody's against him. From Absalom to Ahithophel to Mephibosheth, remember Ziba, Mephibosheth's servant, came out and said Mephibosheth is hoping this will be an opportune moment for him to become king. He gets to Bahurim, and he runs into Shimei, the Benjamite, who's throwing rocks at him and cursing him. So here we have in this movie, David is now camping out at the Fords of the Wilderness. Hushai has given his advice to Absalom. Now verse 15, we really start into some of this intrigue. Now remember, Hushai is David's spy. He's there to try and help David by sending counter-counsel. So verse 15, "Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar the priests, 'Thus and so did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus and so have I counseled.'" Now he didn't actually say thus and so. You understand they're summarizing, right? So that the writer doesn't have to go back through all the advice a second time. Thus and so, summarizing it all up for us. So he's telling Zadok and Abiathar, who were co-priests at the time, here's the news. Ahithophel said, "Let's go get him tonight. I said, no, let's gather the whole army, and that'll give him a few days. But here's the issue. We don't know which way he's going yet. So verse 16, now therefore send quickly and tell David, do not stay tonight at the fords of the wilderness, but by all means pass over, lest the king and all the people who are with him be swallowed up. Because Hushai knows, if Absalom favors Ahithophel's advice, and an army is quickly gathered of 12,000 men, and they descend the Jordan River Valley, and they get to David tonight, it's all going to be over. Because David will never be able to withstand that force, and that'll be the end of it. So David, get hidden. Don't stand there. Run off. All right? You're in danger here. So he's sending this message. And here's where this fun intrigue begins, because now you've got these spies running around and they have important messages, and they're trying to keep the enemy from finding out what those messages are. At this point, Absalom does not know that Hushai is on David's side, nor does he know that Zadok and Abiathar are necessarily on David's side. Okay, so we have all these agents running around, right, Pete? You like agents? Spies. They're lots of fun, huh? So all these spies are running around Jerusalem, and you're not sure which side they're on. So here's the plan. If you remember from back when David was leaving, he told Zadok and Abiathar to stay in Jerusalem because Zadok and Abiathar have sons named Jonathan and Ahimaaz. And those sons, Zadok and Abiathar at this point are probably older men and not able to do the quick running that's going to be necessary to pass messages back and forth. Okay? They didn't have email back then, and so if they want to get messages, you got to send a runner. And he would just run as fast as he could. We talk about snail mail these days, like the U.S. Postal Service, because of it takes 2 or 3 days to get a letter to somebody. I mean, that's just eternal. And I can text them. As long as they're, well, even if they're driving, they'll get it right away, right? But communication is much faster now than it used to be. We have to understand, too, that we're probably only talking a day or so since Absalom came into Jerusalem. This is all happening very fast. David has left the city. The fords of the wilderness are about 20 miles away, so he probably left the city that same day. And now Hushai has to send these messengers after David, say, don't stay there, don't stop moving. You're in danger. So, verse 17, now Jonathan and Ahimaaz were waiting at En-Rogel. We have no idea where En-Rogel is at. It's a word that means the springs. Okay? And we're not exactly sure where it's at, but it's apparently not very far from Jerusalem and probably is on the way from Jerusalem down to Jericho. So if you're at Jerusalem, you've got about 20 miles from Jerusalem if you head southeast till you hit the Jordan River. And that whole way is a steep, steep descent. You're going down about 1,500 feet in elevation over 20 miles. So it's a pretty steep descent as you go down there. But, of course, it's not a steady descent. You're going up mountains and down mountains and up mountains and down mountains. And you've got to have a Rolls Canardly to get there. You guys know what a Rolls Canardly is, right? Rolls down one hill, can hardly get up the next. Okay. I thought everybody, oh, this is great when I get to use a joke that nobody's heard before. So. Jonathan and Ahimaaz were waiting at En-Rogel. Here's the setup they have. A female servant was to go and tell them, and they were to go and tell King David, for they were not to be seen entering the city. Now, why would you not want these two guys seen entering the city? Yeah, it's probably known who these guys were for. They were good friends of David. So if they come back into Jerusalem to get a message, they're probably going to be seen and arrested. By this point, Absalom has his troops surrounding the city. He's got his men stationed at the guards. And so he's got full control of the city. And so Jonathan and Ahimaaz are exiled from Jerusalem at this point. So the plan was, Hushai goes and tells the priests, Zadok and Abiathar, here's the plan. Go tell David, get out of there. So they send a female servant, just a young girl that would be serving at the temple, and she's got to go to En-Rogel find Jonathan and Ahimaaz and give them the news. And so this is the point in the movie where they're all like ducking around corners and trying to make sure that Absalom's servants don't see them. So, you know, they're running through the dark alleys of Jerusalem, ducking past barrels of fish and barrels of olives or whatever it is they store along the streets. If it's anything like it is today, it's not all that hard to travel without being noticed much, because the streets are very, very crowded. They're very narrow, and you won't move very quickly, but you can get through there without being seen too much. So this young girl goes to En-Rogel to find them. Verse 18, there's a little clink in the plans there. The men are seen. So the girl gets to these two men, verse 18, but a young man saw them and told Absalom. So somebody on Absalom's team sees this girl giving Jonathan and Ahimaaz a message. And it clicks in his mind, this is not good for Absalom, and I'd kind of like Absalom to win. So he goes and reports it. And Absalom then sends out a couple of servants to find these two guys. So both of them went away quickly. So you have to imagine the fast-paced music, you know, as they're running away. So now they're running away from Jerusalem, and they're being chased. Great chase scene, right? And so they're being chased as they run away, and they got to find a place to hide so that they can get to David. They went away quickly and came to the house of a man at Bahurim. Now, Bahurim is the same town where Shimei was at. It's just a couple of miles from Jerusalem. It's past a couple of hills, so you can no longer see Jerusalem from here. You've gone up a hill and down a hill and up a hill, and you're a couple of miles away. So they make it that far, but they realize they're going to be overtaken soon if they don't hide. And so they stop, and they're trying to find a place to hide. So they came to the house of a man at Bahurim, probably who they knew was pro-David at this point. And he has a well in his courtyard. This is an interesting point, because it was not all that normal to have a well in your courtyard. Usually there was a well outside of town, and everybody would go to it and get your water. A couple of times a day, the young girls in the house would go to the well and fetch water. So, Abby, that would probably be your job, to carry 5 or 10 gallons of water, as much as you could carry. Right? And it might be a couple of miles, so you have to walk to McDonald's and get all the water and bring it back home so that we can cook our food and wash our hands and take baths and all that stuff, okay? So that's your job. This guy has a well right in his front yard. Isn't that convenient? Now, we don't often think about the conveniences we have in this day and age, because you've got a little device on your kitchen counter or in your bathroom that you just pull the handle up and bam, you've got water. Almost unlimited supply, right? How many of you lived in a place where there wasn't indoor plumbing? I knew a couple of you had. Patricia, Gary, Cynthia. Yep. Didn't have any water in the house at all. Not even one of those big handled pumps, or that was outside. Yep. And so, yeah, you kind of get this idea. But now imagine if that pump were 2 miles away. You have to go get water. That's kind of where most people lived in this age, except this guy. He's got a well in his front yard. And so you've got this big hole going down into the ground, and you can get your water out of it. So he's probably a person of some means, a rich person, and he's on David's side. So they went down into it, that's into the well. And the woman, which was most likely the wife of the house, the woman of the house, the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and scattered grain on it, and nothing was known of it. Why would she scatter grain on it? Hannah?
Dry it out?
Nope. Camouflage. Because if you just spread a tarp over top of the well, is that easy to find? Probably the person coming in is going to say, oh, wait a second, there's something there. And so she spreads this canvas over top of it, and then she puts grain on top to camouflage it and make it look like she's threshing the wheat there, or she's getting ready to grind it or take it to market or whatever. But it effectively hides these guys. So this is the point in the movie where the guys are down in the well, and the bad guys are coming in, and they're like poking at the grain pile, and they're walking all around, and they're threatening the woman. And if we find anybody here, you're in trouble. Right? And this is the part, too, where the music goes all quiet and you're just waiting for them to find them. Are they going to lift up on that that canvas and see the well under there. I don't know what's going to happen. She scattered grain on it, and nothing was known of it. Verse 20, when Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house, they said, "Where are Ahimaaz and Jonathan?" They probably saw them run this direction. They probably know that this person is pro-David. So they're probably aware that these Jonathan and Ahimaaz came through here. But they don't quite know where they're at. But this woman is showing her faithfulness to David because she's hiding his counsel or his messengers. And she says to them, "They have gone over the brook of water." So there were probably some streams running around town too. And so when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. So this is where the stress of the scene ends a little bit. The guys run away. They're looking all over the place for Jonathan and Ahimaaz, but they come back and they just can't find them anywhere. And so they return to Jerusalem, and the message that that Hushai has sent is safe. And these two messengers are safe. So verse 21, after they had gone, the men came up out of the well and went and told King David. Now, this is funny because this is one of those instances. You ever seen a movie that spends a great deal of time and detail on a very short period of time and then like skips a whole huge section? How many of you ever saw the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks? Okay. And it's like a two-hour-long movie, and the first hour and a half deal with his first 3 weeks on the island, and the last 20 minutes of the movie deal with the next 4 years, right? And so he eventually escapes. So it spends a huge amount of time and detail on the beginning of the story. Well, we just spent all those verses on about a half an hour worth of stuff. They traveled 2 miles. They hide in the well because this is all the exciting things, the important things that are going on, right? But they go the next 18 miles without any incident. Now that Absalom's servants haven't found them, they leave them alone. These guys are able to travel from Bahurim all the way down to the Jordan River, something like another 18 miles. And so very quickly we're covering the rest of this, but they get to David safely and they deliver the message. They said to David, "Arise and go quickly over the water," that's the Jordan River, "for thus and so has Ahithophel counseled against you." Just in case Absalom is not heeding Hushai's advice, you need to get out of here. Remember again, we are probably still on the first, maybe the second day after this rebellion has begun. This is all very, very fresh. David has had just enough time to get from Jerusalem down to the Jordan River, and it says he was refreshing himself there. But almost no sooner has he got to the Jordan River and started refreshing himself, and up comes running Jonathan and Ahimaaz. "David, you got to get out of here now. You're tired, you're exhausted from running, but it's time to keep moving. You can't stop yet." So verse 22, David arose and all the people who were with him, and they crossed the Jordan, and by daybreak, not one was left who had not crossed the Jordan. So here's this first day. David probably just found out about this rebellion the day before, maybe a day or so ahead of that, but we're really looking at somewhere between 24 and 48 hours that David has been on the run, making preparations. He just lost his home. He knows his son's out to kill him. He's run off. He's had all these people turn against him. I mean, you ever had a day you just wish had never started? You wish you could go back to bed, or you spend the whole day wishing you'd just wake up because it's so horrible? But it doesn't. That's what David's day is going like here. So David crosses over the Jordan River Valley. Now we jump back to Jerusalem. At this point, we don't know which advice was really going to be heeded. We've had some inclination, but now we're going to find out. So the scene switches from David. He's run across the Jerusalem, and now we've panned back. Or sorry, he's run across the Jordan. Now we pan back to Jerusalem, and we're back at Ahithophel. Remember, Ahithophel was one of the ones that was helping Absalom in this rebellion. He helped him get it started. But verse 23, when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his donkey and went off home to his city. And he set his house in order and hanged himself. And he died and was buried in the tomb of his father. I talk about a massive hissy fit. All right? All because his counsel wasn't heeded. Now, I think there's probably more going on here. As we have talked about Ahithophel before, I really think that Ahithophel saw this rebellion as a way to get back at David for what he did to his granddaughter. And maybe he was hoping that this rebellion would help restore some of the honor to his family. So I think there's more going on here than just having your advice ignored. There really is. But whatever the reason, it's big enough that Ahithophel feels his purpose in life is over. It's time to go home. Puts everything in order. Make sure the will is signed. Make sure all the insurance accounts are paid up. The bank statements are out where they need to be. Credit cards are paid off, all that. And he hangs himself. Because for some reason, a life without David dead just isn't worth living at all. Now, does that tell you what side he's on, right? He hangs himself. Well, now we're going to go back to David. Every movie has an antagonist, right? There's the bad guy. It's the person that throughout the whole movie, they're just trying to make you really not like the guy. So that when his end comes, you'll be, yes! And that's kind of what has been building up with Ahithophel here. The scriptural writer has been painting Ahithophel in very bad terms so that when we read this about him, we understand this is not a bad thing that Ahithophel is gone, that he's off the scene. Okay? Well, we go back to David. Then David came to Mahanaim. Anybody recognize that name? Mahanaim? Not where Abigail lived, but you're getting close. This was the seat of government under Ishbosheth. When Saul died, and Jonathan died, and Ishbosheth became king, he put his governmental seat, the capital of Israel, in Mahanaim. So you have Jerusalem here, which David made the capital. You go down to the Jordan River Valley, about 20 miles. The Jordan River snakes its way dead north. Go about halfway up the Jordan River between the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee, and then another 10 miles up into the Golan Heights, and there's Mahanaim. It's a big city, and that's where Ishbosheth was king. So this is where David flees to. He comes to Mahanaim, but he's being pursued now. So we're probably, again, several days later. Absalom has had time to muster the army of Israel. David has had time to get to Mahanaim. And Absalom crossed the Jordan with all the men of Israel. Now Absalom had set Amasa over the army instead of Joab. Amasa was the son of a man named Ithra, the Ishmaelite, who had married Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, the sister of Zariah, Joab's mother. All that is to say that Amasa and Joab are related, and they're related to David. This is one of David's nephews. Okay, and Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. So they are near to Mahanaim, and they're closing in. So if this were a trilogy, this is the end of the first movie as we're getting to it. David gets safely to Mahanaim. And he's in the city, and they kind of hear some war drums outside. They peek over the wall, and there's the army of Absalom camped out in front of them. And that's where it fades off and goes to the credits, right? Except there's a little bit more encouraging news here. When David came to Mahanaim, Shobi, the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the Ammonites, and Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite from Rogalim, brought beds, basins, and earthen vessels, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans and lentils, honey and curds, and sheep and cheese from the herd for David and the people with him to eat. For they said, the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. So David does have some supporters. These are guys that are with him. And actually, one of these guys, Barzillai, the Gileadite, was the person that had housed Mephibosheth for some time before David got him. So we're seeing some of these relationships intertwine themselves. But apparently these very well-to-do people have decided they're on David's side, and they bring him this huge mass of provisions so that he's not destitute and so that his men are not weakly with the coming battle. And so that's where we pan out. They come on, kind of see the camera go up over the walls of the city, and they're spread out over the valley or over the Golan Heights is the army of Israel. Absalom has amassed all the men of Israel to fight against King David. Now, if you'll notice, just very quickly as we end here, a lot of action, a lot of suspense, but there's been something that has not been mentioned throughout most of this chapter. Anybody guess what it is? Well, that's true. They haven't been. But I'm thinking of something a little more important to the story. Yeah. Anybody notice that the name of the Lord has not been invoked or used throughout this whole thing? But do you know where it's at? Don't let that dismay you too much. We've got a whole book of the Bible that never mentions the name of God. Anybody know what that is?
Esther.
Whole book of the Bible, and the Lord's name is never brought up. But he's behind it. Because go back to verse 14. Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. Why? For the Lord has ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel so that the Lord might bring ruin or harm upon Absalom. David's going through all this stress and struggle, but who is at work behind the scenes? God is. He's not silent. He's not absent from the story. He's not missing an action here. God is at work, and he has told us his design. Who is going to win this one? David. David doesn't know that at this point. But we have that benefit of knowing that the end of the story is going to be a good one because God is on David's side. And if God be for us, who can be against us?